What if I said the United States is not a democracy? Would you be shocked? Well, technically, the United States is not a democracy. I know, it's tough to hear. We're going to talk about that in podcast 890, The Bob Davis Podcasts. It's January in present time, and of course, that means it's going to get cold. We have had a series of cold spells and thawing spells. Just look at the ice on the street and in your driveway, how it's breaking up. Think of how that is affecting your pipes and all of your heating and plumbing systems. This is why they fail this time of the year. They don't fail when everything is great. They fail when they're being used the most. So when it comes to keeping all these systems running right, especially at home or your business, when you have plumbing or heating problems, guess what? You call Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go back four generations in good old Frogtown in St. Paul. What does Ryan do? Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing and heating and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Quick story. I had occasion to spend some time with Greg Ryan over the holidays, and we had a little issue here. I live in a duplex with carbon monoxide. My neighbor's carbon monoxide alarm was going off, and we called the guy from CenterPoint. They came over. Nobody could figure out what the problem was or where it was coming from. So I asked Greg, you know, and he went through this long and involved explanation of how these systems work, and it was amazing to me. And this is what I'm talking about. You can fix it yourself. You can have some guy you know come over and fix it, or you can have somebody that knows what they're talking about fix it and make sure it is fixed for good. That is Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Well, I hate my printer because I hate paying for print cartridges. Actually, who I hate? I hate the big box retailers that sell these cartridges at exorbitant costs. And that is why I found Cartridge World in Maple Grove can save you and I up to 30% compared to the big box stores. And of course, their cartridges are guaranteed to perform as good as new. I'll tell you a secret. I have one of their cartridges in my printer now. Got it last year, like last summer. And then I was given a new one. And that thing still, the old one is still working. So this is the level of quality. Cartridge World at 763-420-6632 in Maple Grove off of Weaver Lake Road between Dairy Queen and Subway, or click on the Cartridge World banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. The germination of this podcast idea was a video I happened to see on social media. Some group used Jennifer Lawrence to present an idea that basically says the government doesn't do what we say.
If you're anything like me, you may find yourself constantly overwhelmed by everything that's wrong with politics. And when I say politics, I'm not talking about Democrats or Republicans. I'm talking about the flaws that exist in our political system, regardless of which party is in power. And I know it's hard to talk about politics these days, but look, the government is ours. We pay for it, so it needs to work for us. And right now it doesn't, and I mean it really doesn't. So what's going on here? Is it Russian meddling in social media? Is it him? Is it her? No. Those two were the least popular presidential candidates since they began keeping track of such things. America is no longer even considered a full democracy. We are witnessing a total political system failure in America, which is the complete opposite of what our nation's founders had in mind. So I'm going to show you three lines that show what's causing this failure, how we can fix it, and what you can do about it. So here's your first line. What I want you to do is take any issue you really care about and picture it on this line. This line comes from a Princeton University study that shows how public opinion influences the laws that Congress does or doesn't pass. They looked at 1,800 public opinion polls over a 20-year period, and we took their data and plotted it in this chart. If there is zero support for a law, there's about a 30% chance that Congress is going to pass it. And if there is 100% support for something, the most popular thing ever, there's still a 30% chance that Congress is going to pass it.
Again, according to this video, Even when 100% of the people support a public policy idea, it only has a 30% chance of passing. This is an absurd idea to begin with. Don't have time to go into it all, but with the problems associated with public polling policy proposals, in other words, the questions that you ask and how they're asked and whether or not it gets to the core of the issue, even aggregating those polls is bad. Aggregating those polls and comparing them to legislative results is even worse. Assigning an index or percentage chance of an idea becoming a law betrays a breathtakingly confused understanding of our political system. I guess I could say it's based on the idea, I pay your salary, therefore you have to do what I say. Now, I'm going to play a second audio cut here. This one I've used before, and I just love it. This is a group of kids passionate about climate change, concerned about a recent story in which scientists asserted the idea that we only have 12 years to do something about climate change or there will be a mass extinction event and we'll all die. The kids and their teachers and parents decided to petition their government. They went to Washington, D.C. They were taking video the whole way. Really, it was a demonstration, and the senators and congressmen were supposed to be obsequious and say, yes, you're absolutely right. We're going to fix this. And the videos would show them confronting their elected representative. And then they encounter Senator Dianne Feinstein, who schooled them in actually how the United States government works.
We're trying to ask you to vote yes on the Green New Deal.
Please. Okay, I'll tell you what. We have our own Green New Deal.
Some scientists have said that we have 12 years to turn this around.
Well, it's not going to get turned around in 10 years. What we can do.
Senator, if this doesn't get turned around in 10 years, you're looking at the faces of the people who are going to be living with these consequences.
The government is supposed to be for the people and by the people and. All
you know what's interesting about this group is I've been doing this for 30 years. I know what I'm doing. You come in here and you say it has to be my way or the highway. I don't respond to that. I've gotten elected. I just ran. I was elected by almost a million vote plurality. And I know what I'm doing. So, you know, maybe people should listen a little bit.
I hear what you're saying, but we're the people who voted you. You're supposed to listen to us. That's your job.
How old are you? How old
I'm 16. I can't
you didn't vote.
Vote
for me.
Well, she voted.
It doesn't matter. We're the ones going to be impacted.
Mean something.
It doesn't matter. We're going to be the ones who are impacted.
I understand that. I have seven grandchildren.
Whether they voted for you or not.
I understand it very well.
Senator, the cost of not taking this action is far higher than the cost of what the Green New Deal will be. And
here's
there is enormous popularity for this bill around the whole country.
Here's
and we're asking you to be brave and do this for us and for your grandchildren.
Sure. Get enough for everybody. I'm trying to do the best I can, which was to write a responsible resolution.
Any plan that doesn't take bold, transformative action is not going to be what we need.
Well, you know better than I do. So I think one day you should run for the Senate.
Now, I love this. First of all, I love it because it's Dianne Feinstein, who is a very highly respected Democrat. And so it's a little unexpected that a Democrat confront constituents on what would be perceived as a Democrat issue in this way. And you can't see it, but the expression on the kids' faces is priceless. And I know it's old, but it's so great because the confusion even in the adults' faces is proof. Most people, even educated people, do not understand how the United States government works or how it's supposed to work. And that is because we have all been taught from the time that we were toddlers that the United States is a democracy. Okay, so a definition of democracy is government by the people, in which the supreme power is vested in the people and exercised directly by them or by their elected agents under a free electoral system. It's a little gobbledygook-ish, but it sounds like the United States, right? But we are not a democracy in the purest sense of the word and even in the purest sense of that definition. And this is a source of a great deal of confusion on the part of otherwise intelligent people. For example, do a Google search on this subject. And again, you're going to see so much gobbledygook and people twisting themselves into pretzels trying to explain the form of government we have. But a representative republic is a form of government in which elected individuals represent the citizen body and exercise power according to the rule of law under a constitution. So that's a lot different when you actually look at it from the definition of democracy. In our government, we are a representative republic. And the first thing to remember in all this is, yes, in our system, the people are sovereign. We don't have a king or a dictator. This is referred to as popular sovereignty. But we, the people, also share sovereignty with the federal and state governments. Moreover, our power to choose our representatives and write our own laws is governed by the United States Constitution. So without going into too much detail, this is the result when the Constitution was written of a long history of discussion of who the sovereign was and what the sovereign meant and all of this in the philosophy of law and government all before the foundation of the American Republic. Our Constitution outlines the branches of our government and their powers. It determines the broad outlines of the electoral process and, most importantly, delegates to the authority of the states and the people, respectively, the stuff they didn't write down. Now, I don't have to go into all the details. I'm sure the constitutional scholars out there can add to what I've said, or they can churlishly correct me. That's fine. But hear me out, because this is not a discussion about the writers of the Constitution or what the Constitution necessarily says. The point is this. We share our sovereignty with our government. We elect representatives to exercise our sovereign vote for us so we can pursue happiness. And we delegate the deliberative process to them so we don't have to, all under the auspices of a written constitution, in other words, the rule of law. The idea was and remains that we will find people who have experience serving the people and that they will exercise the delegated power that they have with respect and intelligence to their constituents and to the people in the districts and states and so forth that they represent. In this country, in the United States, people get elected and they serve for a full term. They aren't out of office when their political party loses favor, something that happens in parliamentary systems, and they don't lose their job or their heads when the dictator or king or junta decides they need to go. What do? Every couple of years, they stand for re-election, and if the voters decide they did a good job, well, you can define that accordingly. Then they get re-elected. It's up to you to decide who you're going to vote for or whether you're going to vote at all. For the purposes of this podcast, I want to bring something to your attention, and then we're going to talk about it in the second half. And this is the concept, to a certain degree, of minority delegations in representative bodies and the concern that our founders had about something called the rule of the mob. And we'll talk about it in the second half of this podcast. Very quickly, if you are looking to put an addition on your house, especially this time of year, this is a great time to talk to contractors, and I'm going to recommend Whitetail Builders of Andover, Minnesota, Randy Grabo. Why? Because they have to plan a little bit, and if you're going to do the garage or the basement or a new kitchen or a new master bedroom suite, they will do great work. People I know that have used Randy Grabo just rave about Whitetail, and I've seen the work, and it's pretty amazing, but they need a little lead time, and Randy loves talking to people about this. 612-282-8801, 612-282-8801. Whitetail is focused on the details to help you build your dream. Check them out online at whitetailbuildersinc.com, or you can click on the Whitetail banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Don't forget, if you're looking for a great U.S. manufacturer, you look no further than a place called Ramsey, Minnesota, where Depot Star is. American manufacturing, design, engineering, Depot Star. Visit their website at depotstar.com. D-E-P-O-T-S-T-A-R, depotstar.com. Now, why am I doing this podcast about this stuff? Well, I think it's important because I think today we have people who are intellectually and emotionally immature. It doesn't mean that they're stupid or bad. What it says is that they are ignorant because they think that the people they elect have to do what they say. I mean, this is what they've been taught from the time that they were toddlers. I pay your salary, do your job. And you hear this do your job thing from both sides of the political spectrum. And we have to have people in Washington that do what we want or do what the people want because the majority rules. Now, certainly, legislative majorities decide issues and electoral majorities decide who actually goes to serve in the state capitals and in the federal capital. But some of our founders had a very interesting view of the electorate as a whole. They feared the mob because they believed the mob would lead to tyranny. How can I explain that? Well, think the French Revolution and its roiling mobs of people demanding the heads of the royalty, and then the people who helped the royalty, and then the leaders of the revolution, including the guy who introduced the guillotine, the chief method of execution, in the first place. And in the end, what did the French get? They got a dictator slash emperor by the name of Napoleon, right? Tyranny. James Madison enshrined the idea of minority rights in Federalist Number 10, Federalist Papers, suggesting in part that it was exactly the great number of factions and diversity that would avoid tyranny in the United States. Groups would be forced to negotiate and compromise among themselves, arriving at solutions that would respect the rights of political minorities. Not minorities like, you know, black people versus white people or Latinos versus Asians, but political minorities like people who are for smaller government versus people who are for larger government, as an example. The idea was the influence of factious leaders may kindle a flame within a particular state, but will be unable to spread a general conflagration through the other states. So what Madison was talking about was political factions. Over the years, we've had a few. Most of them have failed to create a general conflagration. The idea here was to control the effects of causes and the factions that support them by protecting the idea of the rights of minority factions, if you will, through various government organs, bicameral legislatures, for example, two houses, an upper house and a lower house, which created a check even on legislators. And then this idea was buttressed by constitutional delegates who really didn't think that Madison was going far enough. And they created a government of so-called checks and balances to further protect against factional and purely democratic influences. What does that mean? It means our government was constructed to avoid the very thing that people say. Do your job. I pay your salary. I sent you there to do your job. Some people joke that what the founders did was created a government that really couldn't do anything. And to a certain extent, maybe that's a good thing. Since then, what we have in this country is a situation where many academics tell students that the United States is a democracy and that the system that the founders created in the 1790s is out of date or doesn't work. Many of these people seem to favor the idea of factional control of government, maybe similar to the European parliamentary system, where, as I said, legislatures and legislatures are controlled by parties. And when a coalition of parties loses favor or loses a majority or can't maintain a majority, then a new election has to be called and the government changes hands. To be quite honest with you, considering the situation with the United Kingdom and Brexit, I don't know how a parliamentary system is necessarily better than the system that we have, because our system is much, much different, because what we do is we delegate to our representatives, so we don't have to run the government. They run the government for us. Why? Because then we can go out and watch football games and smoke meth and you know, go to church or whatever it is, drive our cars or whatever it is that we like to do. The idea is that we have people in the state capitals and in Washington that are supposed to be kind of keeping their eye on things. And they do work for us, but they work for us as a whole. And they do their jobs under the auspices of a constitution. State constitutions and the federal constitution all in the image of the federal government, which has the system of checks and balances and so forth. We delegate to our representatives. They serve their terms. They act in the best interests of all their constituents, or are supposed to. So when you say they are not doing their job because they're not doing what you say, well, actually, they're doing their job when they don't do what you say. Aside from the folly of adding up the responses of a bunch of polls and comparing it to legislative output, the idea that the government isn't doing anything, meaning an abdication of their duty, they're not doing anything, they're supposed to have output, they're supposed to pass laws, isn't really an American idea. The idea is to do the best thing. Factional passions are cooled off in the process. They start at the House of Representatives, which is often called the People's House because it is the closest to the people. And originally, the U.S. House of Representatives was the only federal office that you voted on. You didn't vote for the president. You voted in a presidential election, but the Electoral College appoints the president of the United States, which is also a nod to the parliamentary system. In a parliamentary system, the parliament appoints the prime minister, and in a constitutional monarchy, the parliament appoints the prime minister, and then the queen actually, or the king actually, solemnifies that process by basically handing the sash to the new prime minister. But in the United States, the Electoral College picks the president based on the popular vote, supposedly. And I don't need to go on and on and on about that because this is a thing that people get so upset about. It's a representative republic, and power is shared through all these different sovereign groups, this dual sovereignty. There's a whole bunch of philosophical ideas which are all rolled up in our government, and people don't want to waste their time studying those things. But if you actually read these things, if you read this book called Controlling the State, which I've talked a lot about, if you read The Federalist, and if you read history, you can understand what they were trying to get to. And no, it was not perfect, but it is not a democracy in the pure sense of the word. So, again, the idea was factional passions would be cooled off in this process. So the governments at the state and federal level all sharing power within their respective branches and jurisdictions, and with the people can vet options. And again, this gets down to this idea that sometimes the thing that you want them to do isn't the thing that we should do. And people are very passionate about this, these ideas. Certainly, a good example would be isolationism and no foreign entanglements, which dominated the United States government through World War I all the way up to the start of World War II. And there are many other examples, legislative examples. The Voting Rights Act, for example, was something that Democrats, Southern Democrats, were against, and Northern Democrats and Republicans came together to actually enshrine civil rights as a legislative, set of laws, here in the United States. So we have different factions and ideas that get vetted in terms of the right way to go. You might not agree with Social Security and Medicare. Eventually, there might be a different kind of system, but the idea is it's a slow process and ideas are consistently talked about and voted on, and it takes a long time. And again, why is this? Whoever you vote for doesn't necessarily do what you say. Why not? And this is what drives me crazy when people are like, you don't do what we say to do. Because sometimes the thing we want is not a good idea. Sometimes the majority is wrong. And this is why the minority on any passionate subject is important to listen to, because sometimes the people are who we don't want to listen to because we don't agree with them are right, and we don't know whether they are right or wrong until we get down the line and we see all the information. And that's why we pay people to be representatives, to make those deliberations for us with our input. And it's important, I think, to also consider the idea put into action so brilliantly by Queen Elizabeth I. Sometimes the best thing to do is to procrastinate, to do nothing for as long as humanly possible. And this is why people refer to the United States representative republic as the most stable form of government in the world today. So the next time somebody says lobbyists and billionaires are running our corrupt government and it doesn't do what we say it's supposed to, ask the question, who's we? I mean, don't the owners of Amazon, the stockholders of Amazon, or the stockholders of AT&T, or the stockholders of, I don't know, pick any public company or even a private company, don't the people that run Peace Coffee have the right to petition their government? So we all have the right to petition the government, and there are all kinds of arguments about whether or not money in politics is a corrupting influence. I believe that it is. I've done podcasts about it. But, you know, it would take too long to run that whole thing down in this podcast. But I guess what I'm saying is the question is who's we and who's right? And we need to think more about what a gift a representative republic is, even with some of the most negative, corruptive influences, which I believe do have to be addressed. But that's another podcast. And again, the great thing about a representative republic is that it takes a long time for an action to actually take place, and it takes into account not only the pernicious and dangerous power of mobs, no matter which end of the political spectrum that exists at the time these mobs come from, as well as, and most importantly, the dangerous and pernicious power of government, which may be why Benjamin Franklin is famously said to have remarked when asked by a woman, what have you done in there at the Constitutional Convention? And he said, what kind of government is it? It's a republic, ma'am, if you can keep it. Actually, I think Benjamin Franklin said something like, madam. He said, it's a republic, madam. And if it bothers you that this is the way the system operates, well, then what has to happen is we need a new constitution. You can't really cobble a fully democratic system onto a republican system. You have to rewrite the whole set of rules. And I believe that this is actually the argument that we're having in this country. We have people that want to change and completely rewrite what we have as a constitution to reflect a different type of values. I think that's a very tall order because I think we have an excellent system in the sense that it does vet options and it does take a long time for things to take place and come to fruition. And for me, the thing that I've learned is that, again, sometimes the things we think should be done are not the things that should be done at all. So the longer it takes to get those things done sometimes is better. So if you want to change the system, well, it's going to take literally a revolution in this country. And I hear lots of people talking about civil war and revolution and everything else. But the answer is to develop your own political movement and work within the political system such as it is and figure out how to solve problems. But you have to be willing to accept the fact that you're not going to get everything that you want to get. And that's the rub in politics. And I've talked a bunch about that, and I don't want to go on too long. But I think that's a great place to end this podcast. Okay, pipes freezing and cooling. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating to check out whatever kind of problem you got. Carbon monoxide alarms going off is a good example. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, you call 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Online at ryanplumbing.com. Of course, people can punch holes in what I'm saying, which is great. But I would just like you, as I do these podcasts, to talk about what I feel are larger issues without getting into the day-to-day screaming and yelling about what somebody tweeted or what's going on. I do these this way so that people can think about these bigger issues that that need to be considered when you think about elections, and I'll do that some more. I'm going to go down to Iowa at some point here, and I guess the debate on is the 15th or 14th of January. I'll probably head down about then. That's going to be at Drake, and I am going to be covering the Democrats. So some of my Republican people might be like, oh, you know, why are you doing that? Well, I think that's where a lot of the energy is right now. Obviously, you have an incumbent Republican president, so there's not going to be too much excitement at the Republican caucuses and conventions. And again, in the interest of vetting what each side is saying, I think it's going to be very interesting to hear what people like Bernie Sanders have to say and Pete and some of these other people. And I think it's going to be fun down there. So I am accepting donations for Mobile Podcast Command for fuel. After the debate and after the caucus on February 3rd, well, there might be more travel. We'll see what's up with that when we get there. Thanks for liking and sharing. I don't appreciate the comments because most of the time people don't. They just comment on headlines. You do not need to comment on a post. Please share it if you think it's a good idea. And thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Also, Spotify, which is a great place to listen to podcasts if you are on an Android device. Stitcher.com, also TuneIn. iTunes, of course, is the place to subscribe to the Bob Davis Podcast. I appreciate it if people subscribe, but you can also subscribe to the Bob Davis Podcast right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 890. It ain't a democracy.
I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair, and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you. And I'm wondering what it is I should do. It's so hard to keep this smile from me.